16-year-old you, how important on the scale of different tests was the burnout test?
To when I was 16?
Yeah, or all the kids at that time.
Oh, burnout. I still remember at our high school, at the end of the year, we had burnout competitions in the parking lot the last day, and the principal would be out there calling the cops. Because, I mean, everybody would light up the parking lot, and everybody would stand there cheering everybody else on.
So it's almost more important than the quarter mile.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's all about the burnout.
You guys had already done, I don't know, 5-6 seasons of Dream Car.
Right.
And then whose idea was it to do a 1-hour special for TV?
I can't remember. I think Lestraco, actually our camera guy, said, you know, wouldn't it be cool to do a shootout and see which one is the fastest? And it evolved from there, and we, you know, went for pizza or whatever and came up with the idea of doing one.
Mm. How'd you pick the cars? Was it self-evident to you growing up in that area which of the, how many cars were there, seven
cars? Yeah. So we tried to get different manufacturers, so obviously, you know, Mopars, Pontiacs, Fords, you know, AMCs, Olses, tried to kind of get all of the big manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And it was really what we had in the showroom.
Okay
whether it was a couple cars were customer cars, bunch were my own cars, one we had just finished a restoration on. So it was just, I think we got everything here. Let's do it.
So this cars, is they're in my blood. My passion for them is what fires me up to go to work every day. LMC is what's grown out of that passion. Spending every day with people that think cars are more than just transportation. They define who we are, who we want to be. They represent our freedom. Since before I could drive, my life has revolved around an appreciation for the history, the power, and the beauty of the automobile. This shop is not quiet or stagnant. These works of art seem to need constant attention. We are not your typical caretakers. Every craftsman that works here loves what they do. Seems like all the people who surround me here are also addicted. Some turn flat metal into beautiful shape. Others are obsessed with lines. Some with color and reflection. Others with mechanical things and safe. Together we try to achieve perfection. Like traditional art, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. So we sell special cars from every era, because everyone has a car that for them is legendary. Unlike a painting or sculpture, the original intent of this art is for form to follow function. Let's never lose sight of that fact, no matter how beautifully restored or how expensive these cars become. They're meant to be driven. There are 150 cars that reside in this building, but assembled here in the atrium are 7 of the fastest muscle cars ever produced. The 69 GTO Judge, the 70 LS6 Chevelle, the 70 Buick GS Stage 1, an AMX 390 Good Package, the 69 Boss 429, a Hurst Olds, and a Hemi Challenger. They are here to answer the often asked question, which is the greatest muscle car of all time?
It's kind of a romantic opening, huh?
Yeah, did you write that yourself?
I did. Now it's kind of, it's a little cheesy. But it was, you know, group of guys, we all love cars, and it was, I truly believe that cars should be driven, and especially today. I mean, you start talking 6, 7, 8-figure cars, and it's really easy to say it's too valuable to drive, but they should be driven.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I'm sure you thought to yourself, you know, Speed Channel, or I guess it was Speed Channel at that time, not Speed Vision anymore. But, you know, in 2006, 1-hour special, you may as well plug LMC a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Which is the greatest muscle car of all time?
So in typical Dream Car Garage fashion, we're not going to talk about it, we're going to prove it. Seven stock original cars out of the LMC showroom. One day, one driver, five tests, one winner.
Yeah, however it went down, they pitched it to, you know, to you, or you pitched it to
Speed. We pitched it to Speed.
Okay, yeah. Okay. So then once they said yes, you went to your sponsors, like Year One and the brake company and the tire National company. Parts.
Yep. Okay. And just said, hey, we want to do this. And that's how we made money with the TV show back then, is we got sponsorship.
Right.
You know, no different than a YouTube channel today.
Sure.
You know, you can do it either through revenue from YouTube, I guess.
Or both.
Or get a sponsor.
Right.
So we went to all the sponsors, and they had their experts, and they talked about the cars, which was kind of interesting because not everybody knew what the cars were about, what motors they came with, you know, sort of the history of cars. So half of the show were experts talking about what the cars were. The other half was the actual tests.
Right, right. Or
competitions.
And were the, so the tests were like 0 to 60, slalom, 60 to 0?
Correct.
And quarter mile.
And a burnout.
And the burnout, right, which, right, right. Which was, you guys judged yourselves.
We judged ourselves. That was like the figure skating test there.
Now, were those tests similar to what, you know, Road and Track or other magazines would have used as tests back in the day?
Sure. So 0 to 60 has always been around.
Sure.
You know, standing quarter mile has always been around. 60 to 0 has always been around. The slalom's kind of arbitrary.
But I think it's important.
Yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes they put, you know, what's the best cornering G in that.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was sort of the common, you know, four sort of basic things is 0 to 60, stopping, quarter mile, handling, and then I think we were the first guys to do a little burnout.
Yeah, I was going to ask. They weren't doing burnouts back in the day.
No, they weren't seeing who would do the best
probably
burnout.
Probably the most viewed on YouTube the burnout section.
Yeah.
Now, Peter's going to be driving a lot of different cars in a lot of different scenarios, so to keep things fair, we'll give him three runs at each test.
So you had three attempts at each.
Right. So what we did, because obviously, you know, you could have spun the tires, you just didn't drive it properly.
Yeah.
And you're jumping from one car to the next car to the next car to the next car. Everything, clutch works a little higher, a little lower, whatever. So three at everything.
Right.
And then we would take
other than the burnout. Did you do three burnouts?
No, I think we did two burnouts. So, but everything else, we did three and took the best one.
Right.
Right.
Was this something like, you know, a test you would have loved to have seen when you were 16?
Oh, for sure.
Right.
For sure. And, you know, as Rick from NPD, National Parts, said, is back in the day when, you know, the magazines did the testing.
Right.
The manufacturers would provide the car. And the car could be lighter. I mean, the car could be tuned. The car, you know, they didn't check anything. So the manufacturer, it's in their best interest to give them a really good working car.
Right.
You know, and we tried to level it out in the sense that we took them out of the showroom. We made sure they were good running and driving, like nothing was, you know, not working properly. And then we did take a brand new set of tires on all cars.
Right,
and
so they're even.
And the factory tires they came with, you know, reproduction tires, but, you know, bias ply tire. We put new brake pads on every car, each the same brake pad. So we didn't have one with a set of Hawks on it and the other with, you know, Canadian Tire brake pads on it.
Right.
So we tried a little bit to level it out. But obviously, you know, one car was tuned better than the other one.
Yeah, you're never going to get it perfect, but I think that's probably as close as you're going to get.
Yeah,
none of those cars clearly were set up to go run.
No, none of them were set up to run. None of them had special equipment like headers. One of the things that, you know, hurt the test from an accuracy point of view was the gear ratios. Like I remember that Chevelle had a 331 and the Boss 9 had a 391.
Right.
So, you know, that really isn't fair. And
right.
Some cars were automatics and some cars were sticks, which again weren't really fair.
Right. But I mean, they were still, you know, a gear ratio you could go by.
Oh, 100%.
So, you know, a sample of, you know, Saturday night in 1970.
Sure.
One guy could have had that gear ratio.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, yeah, it's never going to be perfect.
No.
But did you have a favorite car going in there that you wanted to win?
I didn't. And as we go through, you'll see the Challenger had some problems with the clutch.
Right.
Okay. And it was almost like the second pass of the 0 to 60, which was the first test. It's like, oh shit, it's slipping. Mm. So, and you know, all the camera gear is there, everybody's set up. It's not like we got time to change a clutch and do it. So I did have to baby that car, and boy, did I get some hate mail.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll go through it after. But.
It only takes 5.677 seconds for the excuses to begin.
All right, I can try and make excuses. The tires are only 14 inch. I spun them too much every single time. Now keep in mind, we're leaving 25 pounds of pressure in the tires the way you would drive it on the street for all the tests. If we drop the pressures way down, maybe it would hook up a little better. And if I had a little more practice, I think I could get it to hook better. But we got 3 runs, that's it. First time I took the car up to about 2,500 RPM, it spun the tires and then fell over on itself again. Figured I need more RPM, I took it up to 3,000 RPM and I just broke the tires.
That an automatic?
The middle run was the good one. We have 3 runs because the first run I got too much wheel spin. The last run I bogged a little bit off the line. I didn't give it enough gas. The middle one I think we got it pretty much right, hooked up, worked pretty good. Rattle in the muffler.
I have to admit that car did, it was bone stock,
the Boss 429.
Yeah, but it was a really good working car.
Mm.
You know, sometimes you can get into a, you know, car in the showroom and go, that one's a little sloppy, and
right,
sometimes you get in a car and go, that car, somebody has debugged it and it works good. Mm. And I have to admit that car did work really good.
Mm.
Yeah,
first time off the line it bogged a little. Second time I gave it a little too much RPM, spun the tires. Third time hooked up pretty nice, a little less RPM. Thing hooked really hard. A lot of you guys think these bosses don't run. I'll tell you, at the low end, it worked really nice. Well, I think the first or third run was the best. The second run, it just bogged off the line. You don't get a second chance here at 60. It's not like a quarter mile where the pure grunt's going to take you through the top end. The first run, the car hooked up really nice. I think the 0 to 60 time is going to be good. The second run on the 1-2 shift, it felt like it slipped a little bit, so I'm not going to do a third run. I want to save this car for the quarter mile on the burnout contest. I think run 1 and 2 are going to be my strong runs. If it bogs, it's all over, you're done. So one of the first 2 runs is going to be the quick one.
After 1 of 5 rounds is the Boss 9 Mustang, and look at the Chevelle. Although the competition's very close, it's going to have some making up to do. When we come back, we'll bring this whole thing to a full stop.
What we did is we did a point system.
Right.
And just 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Whichever one.
Whichever, got the highest points. And the...
The Hurst Olds.
Hurst Olds was
the auto car? Fastest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Challenger was a stick. The Buick GS was an auto car. The Chevelle was an auto. the GTO was a stick and the AMX was a stick. And it kind of makes sense. I mean, take the Boss out of the equation there. Like I said, it was a really good working car. The next five cars are within 0.7.
Yeah.
Or so. Sorry, 0.3.
Yeah.
0.3 of a second.
So pretty tight.
Pretty tight. And then the AMX, I mean, it's, you know, you're talking 429, 454, 426, you know, 455, you know, 400.
Big engines.
Big engines. The 390 was a little bit of a...
on the small side.
Yeah.
Right.
So it all those things made sense.
Yep.
And you know, I didn't think there was anything really out of line there.
Right.
Yeah. If you bought a muscle car back in the day, you knew the thing wasn't going to stop fast, but you hoped it was going to stop. Now, this is a part of a rounded performance test, so we're going to have to test braking. You didn't like my idea with the wristwatch and the whole speedometer thing.
Not at all. So what are you going to do?
So Steve Ruiz comes up from Stop Tech Brakes. Now, he's got this Stalker radar gun. He took it all apart, did something to it, plugged it into the back of his laptop. So you just have to get to around 60 miles an hour and hit the brakes.
You don't have a clue what he's doing. You can't even explain it to him, can you? You just know it works.
You've got to have faith that it will work. So we have faith in Steve. Now, as far as friction material is concerned, we wanted to make it fair. Didn't quite know how, so we went to Paul Fix from Classic Tube.
Through these late 60s, early 70s cars, they were all single piston, disc brake calipers up front, drum brakes in the back. But to equalize all these cars, we had to have pads and shoes that were identical. So Satisfied came out with this perfect set for all these cars, custom made. They should perform, as far as braking goes, equivalent. Now, the real test will be whose system is the best as far as GM, Ford, or Chrysler.
So basically, Satisfied supplied the brake pads, Paul Fix installed them, Steve Ruiz is setting up the actual test, he knows what he's doing, and you did nothing.
So obviously Peter doesn't see the value in a good long nap.
So I must admit, back in the day, we would just rib each other the whole time. You know, he would say something, I would get him back. He would, you know, he was funny as hell. He really was.
He doesn't see the value in a good long nap.
And he would come up with that stuff just off the top of his head.
So Tom was there the whole time driving none of it.
No.
Just that would skew the test big time.
First time, I just hit the brakes too hard, locked up all four wheels. Second time, I hit the brakes, the rear ones grabbed. It started pitching the car sideways. I saw the cameraman actually running, so I lifted out of the brake pedal, terrible one. The last one, it's braking as good as it can. I think what we're doing is we're rolling these cars back and forth a whole bunch. They got the self-adjusters on the rear brake drums. It's expanding, and actually the rears are coming on before the front, causing the cars to lock up. Definitely an exciting car under braking. First time I braked really hard, and I could feel the back wheels lock up.
The problem with getting the drum brakes to be a balance at their maximum potential to slow the car and not actually lock up, so.
The first time was almost scary. As soon as I hit the brakes hard, the car just darted all over the place.
Yeah, the brakes slow the wheel and tire assembly, but the tires actually slow the car.
Second time, trying to threshold brake a little bit more, it worked better. The third one stopped nice and straight. That was by far our best run. This car under braking, pleasantly surprised. No drama whatsoever. Threshold braking, very easy to modulate the pedal. Easy car to stop straight. The first run was a little bit scary. The pedal was spongy and it just felt like it was gonna go to the floor. It felt okay at the end. Now it's sort of funny that these things are getting better with each braking, and I think what we're doing is finally getting some heat into the pads and into the rotor, and that's actually stopping better. Seems like these brakes get better with every stop, and again, I think we're putting heat into the pads. The other thing is these bias ply tires tend to really squirm around, so if you start to get them locked up, you're not going to come back. They're not as easy to modulate as a radial tire.
The tendency of the drums that it's self-energizing, so it doesn't respond quite as quickly. There's a little hysteresis. So if you reach the limit, you're pretty much stuck there. It doesn't respond and back off of the limit as quickly as this. So once the car's out of balance, very hard to bring it back.
You know, every time I do this test, I realize 60 mile an hour is pretty fast in one of these old cars to just be slamming on the brakes. Try it next time you're on the road. Make sure you look in the rearview mirror before you do it, though. Nothing exciting about this car under braking. The only downside is the floats are set a little bit too low, so when you brake hard, the car really wants to stall.
Well, after the second of five rounds, the Chevelle redeems itself in braking, of all things, and then rockets up the chart to tie itself with the Boss 9 Mustang for the overall lead. When we come back, Peter gets up on the wheel of seven great dream cars.
So the Chevelle was actually the best under braking.
And it looks like the big, heavy car there.
Right. And again, I think a lot of it had to do with Steve Ruiz. He was the stop tech guy. He was actually there, one of the owners.
Okay.
So he measured all the distances and then he had some sort of device for it. and he said, like, this is going to be tough to do because the drum brakes on all the cars in the rear
are going to be set differently.
Yeah, and we didn't preset them, and they have self-adjusters, so you back it up, and it expands the brake drums, so it locks up quicker.
Mm.
So we didn't, you know, set it or do anything. We just, again, took it out of the showroom, did it, backed it out of the trailer, did a couple runs, and so some of the cars, I mean, just wanted to lock up the back and turn the car. Like yeah. The one Lestraco was literally running out of the way. It got right sideways and was heading right for him, it out. But, so it's a hard, again, it's hard to get really accurate because of the drum brakes in the back.
Right.
You couldn't threshold brake very easily.
No, because the rears lock up too easy, which is terrible.
Yeah. Hmm. So again, the results there, Challenger came in last. I don't know why it really did, come in last there. But
by a good margin.
Yeah, by a good margin. So maybe that one, again, I just couldn't get it to modulate. The backs were coming in harder than the rest. But yeah, the Chevelle was a little bit of a surprise because it's a big, heavy car. And the AMX is the one that I thought would be the best.
For
it's
sure.
The lightest, smallest car.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the rest are kind of straightforward. And again, distances are surprisingly, like 50-foot distance from best to worst is pretty big, but the middle bunch again is almost only 10 feet.
Right, all in the same distance.
Yeah.
A good handling in the muscle car context is not crashing while you change directions in the thing, but we needed to have a test that would compare all the cars fairly. So here's what we did. We set some cones 70 feet apart. Now what Peter's going to do is enter that course in a slalom and drive by a kind of an antiquated timing system spread out over 250 feet. That amount of time will be our comparison for all seven cars. I feel Peter approaching me from the rear. It makes me nervous because that's how he makes most of his money.
Anyway, Corky has supplied us with a bunch of tires from Coker Tire. These guys manufacture original type tires for all of the muscle cars and actually most of the cars from the 20s all the way up. They supplied us with exactly the same tire that the car left the factory with. This car is an absolute pig. 3,800 pounds.
It looked bad.
It had no power steering.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, and again, going back to what's fair and not.
Yeah.
There was a couple cars without power steering, Challenger included.
Right.
All right. And you see on some of the other cars, I'm one-handing it.
Right.
A lot different than no power steering.
Big difference.
So, again, the Mopar guys were pretty frustrated.
But, I mean, you know.
We took them out of the showroom. We couldn't have every car with power steering on it.
Right.
It's just, it wasn't going to happen.
Right. Yeah. Did you set the cones at a distance that, like, would have been done in a road and track deal?
Yeah, okay. And that's actually what we took it from is where sort of the standard slalom test that they were doing. Here's the distance, here's the cone spread, and here's the number of cones.
Right.
Yep. So we tried standardizing that.
Right.
Definitely not the best car around the pylons. The car wants to step out a little, but really easy to throttle steer. Power steering works really nice. So very predictable car, but definitely wants to slide around.
After the first three cars in our slalom test, the Chevelle and the Mustang are very close. The Hurst Olds in third place.
Huh. Was there any car that would have handled like way better? Given like bigger sway bars, or they all had leaf spring rear suspension.
No, so the Chevelle would be a coil spring. Most of the GMs would be coil. The AMC was a leaf. The Challenger would have been a leaf. The Challenger would have been the worst because the front suspension is a torsion bar,
right?
So not a coil spring. So I always think they were kind of the hardest to get working,
right,
really well. And again, you know, the Challenger not doing real well there. flailing about.
Felt really good. The power steering feels good. Throttle response is good. You can kind of power through the corners. The only thing that's a little lacking are the tires, and you can really feel them roll over, and you can feel a lot of body roll on this car.
Obviously smaller sway bars.
Right. Were they all bias plies?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But some were Firestones, some were Goodyears too.
This car is the shocker so far of the whole test in slalom. I can't believe a car this heavy, this car has air conditioning, would go through the pylons the way it did. The way the sway bars work on this car, it stayed fairly level. Nice handling car, and it shouldn't be. It just did.
That's car we just finished a resto on.
On the
Buick? A ground-up restoration. So it was debugged pretty good,
And,
you know, in all fairness again.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Because you weren't... You know, you didn't put all the cars on a scale and set the toe.
No. We did a basic road alignment.
Right.
You know, and we just put stock sway bars back up, and some happened to be bigger than others from the factory.
Right.
Yeah.
What are you going to say about a car with no power steering, that weighs this much, torsion bar front suspension, and a 2-4 barrel setup that you can't really modulate the throttle? Either you're in the one or you're into the both. Just not a fun car to drive on the slope.
The Challenger just looks slow.
Well, again, car didn't have power steering.
Right.
Yeah. So, and that was the other thing. It was the only car with multi-carbs.
Right.
So to try and get that multi-carb set up to work nicely when you're just finessing the gas is hard.
Right, it's going to be kind of lazy and...
Yeah,
yeah.
This car is exactly what you'd expect. Short wheelbase, light, nimble car.
You'd think the... Well, the AMX would do well on this.
Yeah, I would have thought that, you know, short wheelbase, so it would turn nice, it's a lighter car.
Yeah.
Power isn't obviously as big a deal here at all.
Mm-hmm. Went through the slalom very nicely.
Well, after 3 of 5 rounds, the Buick GS and the AMX do surprisingly well, taking the Buick to a first place tie in the AMX all the way to third.
So, yeah. So the Buick GS was the shocker.
Right.
The AMX is kind of what I expected. The Chevelle was stronger than I expected, and the rest were kind of just where we thought they would be. But, you know, first to fifth was a tenth of a second, and then it, you know, it went to, you know, 4/10.
Yeah, it's amazing that, like, there was real competition in 69 and 70 between these cars.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it was a big deal, and a lot of, you know, a lot of the... consumers were diehards. You were either a Ford guy or a GM guy or a Mopar guy, and you know, they really wanted their car to be the best.
Right, right. And yeah, you didn't want to get stuck with a, you know, say you were a Mopar guy, you didn't want to get stuck with a car that was a complete slug compared to everything else.
No, so. And with a lot of the cars, they had different attributes.
Mm.
You know, and the standard one would be the quarter mile.
Right.
That was the big thing that everybody was after is, you know, how quick is the car in a quarter mile?
Right. Because that's what everyone was buying them for.
Oh, for sure. For sure.
We're going to start with the burnout to get the tires hot. Now, with street tires, you don't want to go into the water. You just want to go beside them, get them nice and warm. Then we're going to stage the car. Then we're going to launch the car. And then we're going to figure out what the ET is, the elapsed time. It's going to be somewhere in the 13 to 14 second range, and we're going to find out what the mile an hour is.
So when these yellow lights come on, Peter knows that he's got about a second and a half before he has to leave. Now, if the red light goes on, he's going to remember that summer he spent in Amsterdam, and he could be sitting on the line for hours.
He just came up with that.
Oh, yeah. Just right off the top of his head.
And they made you put the open face helmet on for one.
Performed exactly like I'd expected. Easiest car to shift, nice and strong out of the hole, but compared to the other big block cars here, it just doesn't have the grunt at the top end. I mean, it's still pulling, but not pulling the same as the rest of them.
So that was, you know, and trying to power shift all the cars, so just leaving the gas pedal matted.
Right.
You know, going through the gears like that, and that thing, it was slipping really bad. It would have been, could have been probably the fastest quarter mile car.
Is that kind of your impression of like those Mopars at the time? Like they were the fastest quarter mile car?
They were right there.
Disappointed in the car, actually not in the car, in the clutch. On the first pass, the car worked pretty good. It bogged off the line. It's the only multi-carb car here that we're running. The second and third pass, I had to stop power shifting in the higher gear, the 3-4 shift, slipping huge amounts. So this car, I mean, it did what it did, but it could go faster, just we need a new clutch.
If I hadn't done the test myself and somebody said, you know, what order would they go in, I would have probably said the LS6, the Hemi car, and then probably the Boss 9.
Right.
You know, so, and I think the Hemi car would have gone better. The LS6 would have done better, but it had a 331 gear.
Mm.
So those two cars, in all fairness, you know, were faster cars with similar gears and a clutch that wasn't slipping.
Right.
Yep.
This silver car behind us here is probably going to pay the price for having the tall gear in the automatic transmission.
Frankly, I'm a little disappointed in the LS6. For starters, I think it's got a 331 gear in this car. With the automatic, it just doesn't pull as hard as a lot of the other LS6s I've driven. First time I spun the tires, that was 100% my fault. Second time, I don't like the shift either in this thing. It's a turbo 400, and the governor is 100% stock. A lot of guys would rework that, so it's shifting kind of at the wrong RPM for drag racing. A little disappointed in this car.
Just beating on the...
Oh!
four cars all day long, and I mean power shifting every gear change.
And how many of these cars were actually yours, and how many were customer cars?
I want to say like at least four of them were mine.
Okay.
At the time, and the rest were customers.
And how
I was
did
just as hard on everybody's car?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. How did you convince the customers that you were going to beat the snot out of them?
I'm still shocked to this day sometimes what people would throw us keys to put it on the TV show. I mean, everything from muscle car stuff, and they would ship their cars to us.
Really?
Oh, Yanko cars and like rare muscle cars, and then on the supercar end. Here's the four cam. I mean, Veyrons.
Yep.
Here's the car. Take it for the afternoon. You know, just drive it, have fun in it, abuse it, you know, do whatever you want with it. And all the way down to Miller's stuff at Watkins Glen, the Ken Miles GT40 and the Daytona Coupe, the Le Mans winning Daytona Coupe. Here.
Take it on the racetrack.
Take it on the racetrack. The Penske Sunoco car, take it on the racetrack. Some valuable stuff. People would just hand me the keys and say, have at her. And I guess they assume that we could fix anything we hurt.
Mm, good point.
Which we could have. And, you know, they thought, I guess I was semi-competent enough not to crash the stuff.
Right. Right. But far different from, you know, say a Doug DeMuro or something where they just cruise down the street. You were getting the cars and doing a burnout contest.
Burnout top speed around Watkins Glen.
See if we can flat spot all four tires on 60 to zero.
One there, I tried heating up the tires a fair bit. I got them a little too hot. The thing kind of bogged after it bit in and it rolled over on itself. So I think the best run is going to be the second one. That's the winner. I think the first run was the best of the bunch. The second and third run, it just seemed to fall flat on its face, and I probably should have given it a little more RPM, like did a little longer brake stand. I didn't. The tires hooked up really well, and it just went, bah! So first run's the best one of the bunch. Pleasantly surprised with this car. First two times I lit the tires up a little bit too much. The last time it hooked up just nice. Easy car to power shift. And all those guys that say Boss 9s don't work.
See the ballooning of the top?
Oh, yeah.
It's getting air in there.
Yeah, yeah, you got a convertible here. I mean, the Buick looks blatantly slower than the Boss 9.
It was. The Buick was just a really good, it's a really good run and driving car. It's a big car. It's a heavy car. It's got, you know, a parachute for a convertible top
right
on the thing. And what was interesting is we just finished that restoration, like I said. The guy that we did that for has become a really good friend, and I think last year or the year before was his 60th or 65th birthday. I forget what it was, and he had a big cruise and invited a bunch of buddies down to do a cruise,
mm-hmm.
and I drove that car. He still has it.
Cool.
I drove that car in the cruise that he did for a couple of days and still works really good, and really good car that one was.
Well, the first run, again, it bogged a little bit. The second run, I gave it way too much throttle. I spun the tires. The third run was pretty good. It's all about getting used to the tires. I'm certain if I had two or three more runs, we could run a little quicker, but the rules are three runs. That's what we gave it, and that's the time.
Well, there you have it. Four cars down into the 13s, making a fairly respectable run. Unfortunately, the Challenger, not so much.
Ready for burnout?
So there you go. You know, 1370, 1370, 1318, 1319, 1390, and all the rest are 14 zeros, like almost 14 flats, other than the AMX.
Right, just because that car is down on power.
For sure.
And you think, you know, that you, if you had a clutch in the Challenger, it would be right there with the Mustang.
I think the Challenger could have beat it the amount it was slipping. Mm. I think it could have been in first place there.
Right, because it's, yeah, it's, you know what, 3/10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I did the last run on that thing, because I thought...
You needed to save it.
For the burnout competition.
Because then you'd get real hate mail if you didn't do a burnout in the in the Challenger.
Well, now we find ourselves in a tie between the LS6 and the Boss 9. Now, the test that Peter absolutely insisted on is the one that there's no real quantitative way to measure. But every single muscle car enthusiast knows what we're talking about when we talk about a earth-shattering, earth-moving, smoky, big, rotten burnout. Now, you do know how to do a burnout, don't you?
Do you know how to eat?
Oh, now that's harsh.
I missed that guy.
Again, the automatic's at a little bit of a disadvantage, trying to get the tires to spin really hard.
Yeah, so you did two.
Yeah.
We can't get it spinning hard enough with the brake stand to start with. If you loosened off the rear shoes, I'm certain we'd do a way better burnout, but we said we're going to test them the way we drive them in all the tests. You know, I was a little disappointed with the quarter mile time on this car. The 331 gears, well, it helps in the burnout. This thing does a great burnout. Once you get them spinning again, it just wants to keep spinning and spinning and spinning. And these Firestones, they go up in smoke quite nicely.
That's a pretty good one.
I'd say the LS6 did a pretty good burnout.
Well, we said we were going to do a real life test. The clutch is almost out of this car. I knew I had to dump the clutch high enough to get them spinning, but I didn't want to take the clutch right out of it. Did a really good burnout, but unfortunately, with all the other things going on with this car, I feel sorry this car hasn't been done justice for the simple fact the clutch is slipping so bad. Gotta admit, I'm a little disappointed in this burnout. I'm trying to launch it in second gear so I don't have to shift right away and lose all that momentum, but the thing doesn't have quite enough torque like the other cars. These red lines don't light up as nice as the Goodyears either.
Those tires, those red lines, it was the only car with red lines, just didn't smoke.
Oh, really? So you're still doing a decent burnout?
Still trying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't smoke.
They just didn't smoke good. I don't know if the compound was harder or what it was.
Something to think about.
Yeah.
Huh. How, okay, to 16-year-old you, how important on the scale of different tests was the burnout test?
To when I was 16?
Yeah, or all the kids at that time.
Oh, burnout, I still remember at our high school, at the end of the year, we had burnout competitions in the parking lot the last day, and the principal would be out there and be calling the cops. Because, I mean, everybody would light up the parking lot and everybody would stand there cheering everybody else.
So it's almost more important than the quarter mile.
Oh, for sure. For sure. It's all about the burnout.
car did the best burnout. Launched it at about 5,000 in second gear, and it just doesn't stop spinning. I can just kind of feather it at 5.
Well, that's a good one.
The second one was better.
To 5,500 and just keep smoking.
That was a pretty good
great burnout car.
Lost sight of it.
Yeah.
It's not like I went easy on any of them.
No. You legitimately tried on all of them. Was there any car that surprised you or gave you more of an appreciation for the car after this test?
Really, the Boss 9. And I mean, we'd had lots of Bosses over the years and stuff.
Yeah.
But that was just one of the ones that worked really well.
Hmm.
It was just a dialed-in car, and we'd just bought the car. And I can't remember who we bought it from, but whoever it was had it working well. It did everything well. And it's just a fluke. Like I said, sometimes you buy a car and goes down the road like it's, you know, a three-legged dog. And other times it just works. That one worked.
Yeah.
So I think if I'd taken another one, because I've driven plenty of them, if I'd taken another one, it could have just as easily been in third or fourth position.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it was tied with the Chevelle, and then after the burnouts, you gave it, well, it was clearly did a better burnout than the Chevelle.
Right.
Yeah.
After the burnout, you had to give it to the Boss.
Right.
And those were the two that were tied. And I mean, you know, going now almost 40 years of doing this for a business, I've driven tons and tons of each one of those cars.
Yeah.
And I would say on average, the one that I would expect to be the best would be the LS6.
Right. Because it's got the whole package.
It's got the whole package. It's a full frame car that has fairly big sway bars. It's got lots of torque, lots of horsepower. It drives really well. I would say on average, the LS6 would probably win that competition, you know, the majority of the time if you just took 10 of each car.
Yeah, and did it over and over and over.
Did it over and over again. The LS6 is the one at least that I've had the most success with.
So you guys did this, and then obviously you got a bunch of hate mail from the Mopar guys.
Oh, and look at Tom's comment at the end. It was hilarious. He knew what was coming. And we used to get a lot of emails from...
from people.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was no social media at the time.
No, it was just straight emails to our website.
Right, so this guy's writing you personal notes.
Yeah.
35 years ago, this collection of cars were arguably the fastest cars on the planet. Are they still the fastest? No, and not by a long shot, yet the legend of the American muscle car is stronger now than ever. And why is that? Because those of us who were around at the birth of this era of muscle witnessed something that will never, ever happen again in the automotive industry. With 7 manufacturers participating in a King of the Hill competition, the beneficiary was the average Joe who could walk into a showroom at age of 19 or 20 and actually have the wherewithal to buy one of these weapons, which had few equals in the day. 5 of 7 of these cars have as much as 426 cubic inches of displacement or more. Gas was cheap back in the day, and that is exactly the basis on which we tested these cars. Now, the guys from Legendary didn't tweak these cars. They delivered them the same way they'd been delivered from the showroom back in the day. But Peter definitely beat on these cars, as if they still cost about $5,000, not 20 or 30 times that amount. This is the real deal. We tested these cars hard. So in real time, at the end of the Dream Car Garage muscle car shootout, based on the burnout alone, the tie between the Chevelle and the Mustang, for your money?
Gotta be the Boss 429. All day, this car performed 100%. When it came to the burnout, this thing just lit up the tires. It was the most fun to drive out of all of the cars. Shifted beautifully. The car worked very, very nicely from start to finish. Chevelle second. A lot of Chevy guys there, LS6 guys, are going to be disappointed. We haven't cheated anything. We haven't changed tire pressure, carburetors. We haven't unhooked sway bars.
Right. So the burnout competition, Mustang, then the Chevelle.
Yeah, the Hurst. Hurstles did a really good one. Challenger did a good one, especially with a dead clutch. Now, once you get them spinning, it wasn't so bad. The clutch was really just slipping in high gear.
Okay,
so not lower gears. So the rest are kind of, again, what you expect. The AMX was the only one that was really a shitty burnout.
Right.
The rest were pretty good.
A lot of these guys in the supercar shootouts are doing a bunch of things to make these cars run. This is the way the cars left the factory. These are the results. For my money, the Boss 429 wins.
And keep in mind that we used an absolutely average driver for all of this. So the Boss 429, I'm going to take the side of the Chevy things. And remember, all you Mopar guys, it's Peter at dreamcargarage.com. All right? We'll see you next time.
He knew. We both knew what was coming here.
I'd have to pick the Hurst Olds.
It was a 1970 LS6 Chevelle.
69 Boss 429.
GTO is kind of the granddaddy of the muscle cars.
70 LS6 Chevelle.
Probably the 70 Buick GS.
Well, I guess Hemi's got the name.
69 Boss 429 Mustang.
I'm going to predict that the Olds is going to clean up pretty good.
The Hemi Challenger.
The GTO Judge 69.
I'm going to have to probably pick the AMX.
So where was this?
This was just at a show, and we went to, you know, various guys. Who do you think is going to win the competition?
Right.
And
it was whatever car they owned.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it was pretty funny. But, we had some hate mail and people, you guys are, you know, Ford guys. You're not into Mopars. You rigged the whole thing. It was like, you know, it was entertaining.
Right. And it's not like... You know, you're selling all of those cars. It's not like you had a vested interest.
Oh no, we
angering
gladly sell
people.
Any one of those. It was one of those times where you realize that TV could be a double-edged sword,
right?
Because I think we lost some guys that would be Mopar guys,
right?
One to the TV show, and two to us selling those cars afterwards,
right? Right. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, did you guys legitimately film that in a day or two? One day?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think it was one day we filmed all that. We had it all geared up. We had Steve Ruiz from Stop Tech did all the brake stuff. We had another guy that did all the accelerometers with one of his pieces of equipment. So they did all the data collecting.
Right.
So all I had to do is just
drive.
And it was a long day. But
you had a big camera crew there too. You got a helicopter?
So we didn't for that one. I thought we did, actually.
Okay.
It was for the supercar shootout where we took, you know.
The super muscle car shootout,
the
yeah.
The super muscle cars, you know. And we did have a heli for that one. That one we didn't. We just had a bunch of different cameras set up.
Right. So we'll go through the super muscle car shootout next.
Somewhere down the road.
Right, because that was like the Yankos and stuff.
Exactly.
Right. So, you know, You ship this, you package it up, and you send it to Speed Channel.
Yep.
And
it was a huge success.
Yeah.
So this was the first one we did. And I'm pretty sure, and I forget how it started, but we pitched them and said, let's do this shootout. And then when they saw the response, it had tremendous response.
Mm.
They said, can we do another one? And that's when we came up with the supercar shootout with, you know, the Yankos and all the kind of Baldwin Motion cars, like special cars.
Right.
And then after that, it was a huge success as well. They said, let's do a small block shootout. And we did more of the Trans Am style cars.
Right.
So the shootout stuff worked really well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you think it was a massive production. And you think how, you know, if you did that in today's production quality for YouTube, that would be huge.
Oh, for sure. For sure. And it was a lot of fun to do. And the small block shootout that we did was more the Trans Am era cars, the Boss 302s and the,
right.
You know, the AARs and that sort of stuff that went Trans Am racing. And for that one, we actually did a lap. On a road course at Dunville, which was a ton of fun too.
Right. Because could you imagine taking these for a lap?
No. So it was a lot of fun.
Huh.
It's almost 20 years ago now.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah, we'll put this out, and then I'll make you watch, and I'll watch the super muscle car shootout and the
small block
shootout.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, thanks.